next is the long-awaited elections report from the election supervisor, Les Radke. Les, again, if you could present in the first half of the presentation, and we could ask you questions in the second half, that would be great.
I'll try to make it shorter than the first half for my presentation, because I know that everybody's read this every page of this 1,000-page report. First thing is I wanted to thank the old board for the Walnut Creek meeting that I was told I was not attending, but I was at, and people did have a vote which was very supportive of the elections. We'll see how the board feels about it now that the elections are over. I do want to say that with the local election supervisors, they were in constant contact with me, so I think they really need to be credited, because none of them committed suicide. No candidates were murdered, and there was an election. And so credit to this really does belong to the local election supervisor, and the blame for things that did not happen belongs to me, straight out. There are two people, David Green and myself, in 2000, who were members of Californians for Electoral Reform, who brought the idea of proportional representation to KPFA. It was adopted for two elections, and when the bylaws were written, it was actually put in the elections that we are to have proportional representation elections. KPFA has advertised this and talked about the proportional elections on the air, and as a result, cities such as San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, Davis, etc., have actually adopted a form of STV in their elections. And I credit Pacifica. So does the Californians for Electoral Reform, which gave Casey Peters and myself a certificate of achievement for publicizing this. And I say this because this is a credit to Pacifica, not to Casey Peters and myself. This would not happen. We are trying to not only have an election process, but we're trying to transform society. That's the goal, it seems to me, of Pacifica, to transform a war machine into a machine of social justice. So when we talk about these elections, and when we talked about it originally, it's to get more activists dealing with what is happening to the poor communities in this country, which are being inundated, not just with Katrina, but all over the country. And so I bring that up because Pacifica, in terms of adopting this electoral thing, process of proportional representation, was adopting a process that would help in the transformation of this society. It's not a technical exercise, and I really hope that people look at it that way. The question of the elections, I'm going to go over this very quickly, just highlighting some points. I'm going to start with the timeline that we have for the elections. Two parts of the timeline. One is when it's held, that is September 25th being the time when candidates are supposed to have their nomination forms, but also the time in which these elections are divided. Much too much time for nominations, not enough time for campaigning, particularly given that many people are unknown by the listeners and they need to be given more time on the air so that they can be known. It was Einstein who said, what was it, that if you do the same thing over and over again expecting a different outcome, that's a definition of insanity. I claim I'm not insane. Some people would say otherwise for taking this job. But I would argue that the timeline in my report is one that should be looked at very, very carefully. All national election supervisors, and if you read the reports, the local election supervisors this time make the statement that this should be changed. It would be really, really helpful to look at the bylaws, and if we have to spend our $15,000 sending out cards for a vote on this, it should be done to change the timeline. And I give an exact timeline that I would recommend in my report, to have a halt and correct some of the things I'm about to talk about, because there are many problems in the election process. Now, just going over some of the problems, certainly everywhere there were some mailing list problems, but at particularly two stations, WPFW and KPFA, I think we were able to more or less solve those problems. At least initially, we were able to go over the list. We were able to do some things with the list. But there were a couple of stations, and in particular WBAI and KPFK in Los Angeles, where there were serious problems. Some of those we understand why they happened. Some of those are a little bit confusing. But the fact of the matter is there should be some manual, there should be some written procedures that people are going through rather than each national election supervisor and local election supervisor struggling at the station saying, here is what might be done differently, and trying to figure out from scratch what is happening with these mailing lists. There doesn't seem to be a standard for how the database program MEMSIS is used. There doesn't seem to be a standard over what the restrictions should be on that mailing list. Should everybody have access to it? Should only one person? What kind of restriction? Should there be some people who are inputting data but can't change data? This is both a it's a management problem. It's something that should be worked out and should be standardized for all the stations. There should not be a couple different ways of sending mailing lists in so that we have to figure out what's wrong and what's right. Fair camp staff problems. Who's on staff? Who's not on staff? I know that there were some very serious questions that are still hanging. Bob Lader brought up one of a couple of people who endorse candidates who are on the air at WBAI. And the question comes in, what role does the national election supervisor and local election supervisors have in determining exactly who's on unpaid staff and who's not? That differed between the last election where Kenny Mostyn said at WBAI and KPFA that the national election supervisor had no choice but to accept anything that the unpaid staff organizations turned in, because that's kind of what the bylaws might say. Another interpretation, my interpretation, was that in addition to that list, we have to look at the bylaws of the unpaid staff organization and try to determine whether the list that's turned in meets that, that people should be allowed to challenge whether people are on or not on the list. And we had some problems with that. There are a lot of collectives, and people had problems with who on these collectives is putting in time, including the collectives themselves, because records weren't kept. And if everybody on a collective is a member of the unpaid staff, that will not go along with, for example, 30 hours in 3 months that the bylaws stipulate for KPF, KPFT, and WPFW. So the paid staff, unpaid staff question should be a lot simpler. We should make sure that we look at that and analyze it so it's not a subjective interpretation. Question of the fair campaign statements. It's been pointed out that I failed in posting most of these. I did send emails on some of them, but they haven't been posted. I'm not on salary anymore, but I've been involved with this movement for way too long, and I don't consider my job over. I think that that still should be done, and I am collecting all of those different rulings, both at each local station and nationally, so that they can be posted now that we have a national website that is working. Again, other people are going to raise questions about that, and I'll attempt to I'll attempt to answer the questions. Technology questions, that's a little bit more clear-cut, although probably not for most of you. The technology question, we've had a program written which basically takes the ballots and turns it into a form for the program that we use called Choice Plus Pro. The elections working group in L.A. looked at it. They ran ballots through it. They tested it, and it worked fine. There was a real big problem with the barcodes on the envelopes. That's been discarded for a couple of reasons. One is that we now have a different method of reading that. I don't want to go into that. I think, you know, the National Elections Committee can deal with that. I'm just going to say that the technology question in terms of the ballots, that has been resolved, And I'm hopeful that the question with the web pages will be resolved, but that should also be looked at, because each local web page should also have a manual. There should be some standard for what has to be posted. Finally, with any of these things that we decide, there have to be some ways of enforcing it. In other words, I can talk all we want. I mean, originally, Greg Guma and I called up and asked for the staff list of the paid and unpaid staff, and it was a struggle. I didn't get some of those lists until the mailing was almost upon us. It was a big struggle for many, many reasons. And it seems to me that if something like this is happening and there are deadlines, that if for whatever reason a station isn't carrying this out, there has to be some penalty, something that has to be done. And if there's not, then we're talking about all of these things just being optional. People will decide what to follow, what not to follow. That's not a good structure, it seems to me. That's all I have to say. I think we should have a dialogue on this whole process.
Thank you. Before I open the floor up, Les, I have a question, small one, to ask you. Right at the beginning of your introduction here, you said that the questions as to the purpose of Pacifica are reduced to questions concern how often and when programs such as Democracy Now! Are broadcast and whether or not we should have more or fewer programs on a particular topic. Rarely are the goals or political importance of musical, cultural, or public affairs programming discussed. What were you thinking? What was your... It goes beyond, of course, the elections process itself. It goes to some fundamental principles. What
That's
were
why
think?
It's called the introduction.
Yeah, what were you thinking anyway?
What was I thinking? It's that when we have some of these very, very bitter debates, for example, on the KPFA local station board, but other boards as well, rather than talking about vision and goals, in other words, here's what we're attempting to do generally with the station, it gets bogged down in a detail. For example, you have picket lines because you want a particular person on the air. That becomes the vision. So the vision is, what can we do next week? What can we do next month? Not what are we trying to do, given that, for example, February 1st in 2008, all analog TV broadcasting is going to be stopped. Is that going to affect anything or not? That's a federal law. Do people even talk about that? Do they know about that? Those kinds of visions of talking a year, 2 years ahead, I never hear. What I hear is, let's get Democracy Now! Move from one time period to another, and that's the vision. And it seems to me that's not what Pacifica's about. What Pacifica's about is transforming our society.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, so I'm going to take, I'll start this way. Go ahead, Rob.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Les, I've got a series of questions about problems with the election that we had, that I emailed to you and the chair several weeks ago. You think I could get a response with some specifics on what we could, on what specific things the board or an election supervisor or management or whoever could do to avoid repeating the same problems?
No. I haven't seen the questions. Partially, if you mailed it to ballot@pacifica.org, we just got it working a few minutes ago.
For 3 weeks?
It's been off for 6 weeks.
Okay. And one particular question,
but
I
now
have...
Now that I have it, I'll look at...
You know. It's all yours.
You need to give him your email.
No, I have his email.
Oh, okay.
And I have ballot@pacifica.org working again.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I just ended up with 1,000 emails.
Lydia?
I had one specific question, and I will try to phrase this as in as politic a fashion as I can. When we see, for election after election, stations that barely meet quorum, and we also notice that they're huge blobs of blank ballots, what does that suggest to you?
It suggests to me that the station needs to do a better job of publicizing the election and looking at the outreach for the elections. I'll give an example. And the as you know, it's September 25th, there is exactly one completed nomination form for the listener section, actually for the total section of the WPFW elections. After 1 week, basically, of constant advertising, we ended up with a full slate of people. That had to do with the outreach coming from the station. We need these kinds of forums to start talking about the vision, which I hope you know, we influence people to talk about rather than their little factional fights. But I think with that kind of outreach, with looking at the elections as outreach, going to different communities, getting some excitement about it because we are trying to transform the whole electoral process in this country, as well as reaching out to new listeners. If we look at it as that kind of thing, I think we can increase the quorum.
Lydia?
Yes, mine has to do with software. Number one, was the envelope, was the barcode issue resolved?
And yeah, we're not going to do it that way anymore. It's already been changed. At the WPFW, for example, three of us did the entire election in 4 hours.
Okay. Then the second issue is...
Because the envelopes are the big thing, and I made a mistake. That was my fault. I made a mistake. I was running everything through one machine. We're not doing that anymore.
Okay. And that's so gone. My other concern is... you had mentioned to me you were not interested in continuing this next period. I hope that's not a private issue. But anyway, but since you were part of the customization of the software,
yes.
In your absence, it seemed to me that it was kind of complicated, at least from what I observed. And so what do we do? Because don't we kind of own it or something now?
Yes.
Okay. What are our options now that we have this software that we may or may not know how to use?
Okay. There are several options. First of all, I'm not yet dead.
That's really good news, Les. Thank you.
And I certainly will be around. Secondly, I and the people who worked on the software are writing up more explicit directions. Some of you saw a little bit of it, but we're finalizing a draft of exactly how to use the software so that, you know, it turns out the software is finished, but it turns out the software we're using is artificial intelligence, and what that means is there's many, many ways of using the same software. So what we have to do is explicitly say, push this. It's like using Microsoft Word. There's lots of options. You just have to know what the options are, and we're limiting it to that. I think we're close to having that done, but we certainly will have it done within a few weeks.
Okay, we have only about 10 minutes, so we'll just please be brief and go ahead.
Can you share on both sides of the table?
Go ahead, AC. Go ahead.
Yeah, the question I wanted asked is the sort of a legal one, but not really. It's, you know, the imperfections in the system, for example. this idea of being able to having people who can afford it being able to go in and get a list and do a mail out to the list, where a lot of people who may not be able to afford it can't do it. So shouldn't there be some standardized regulations on the question of who has access to the list of people? That's number one. Number two, shouldn't it be mandatory that the Pacifica, the differences between the staff and the listener. The a report should periodically be given to the board on this question, and so that we know way ahead of time before the election that who is staff and who is listener.
By the way, I just want to remind the board that you did pass a resolution on that quarterly, I think it was monthly reports be made on the staff, paid and unpaid. but, of course, there's no penalty for not doing it, so it's not done. I agree with the second question. The second question should be a slam dunk. In other words, that stations don't know exactly who's on the staff. Somehow that bothers me. That... there may be a problem. Well, I'll stop there.
Thank you.
The legal question about the mailing list is a troublesome one. What I stated in the report is hopefully we can figure out some way to equalize that. I think it's the worst thing we could have are money wars over this election. We already are spending too much money on the elections to have money wars over sending out these things on mailing lists. What I recommend is that there be somehow one mailing, whether people are equally charged for it, who put in or not, that there be one mailing that anybody can put any kind of candidate material in there and be done with it. I don't know whether that will pass legal legality or not. I just don't know. It should be looked at.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go on this side here. There's some hot questions here. I'll come back to you. Go ahead.
Don
is very anxious.
Well, yeah, I was afraid it was going to all be at that
end. Don't worry. You're good.
No, I'm not worried. You're calling me anxious, and I was just explaining that I know you had a tough job, and I want to tell you that I saw up close and personally the dedication you showed and so on. So thank you for your work. I actually do believe that the biggest problem is lists. But that's not what my question is going to be about. But I think the elections committee, actually the elections committee that has just served over the last year, has a motion around part-time work preparing throughout the year for the upcoming election. My question has to do with the unfair campaign complaints. And you said that it was difficult for you to get them posted and get results up. A lot of people who lodged those complaints were looking for some, you know, answers to them and see whether they were sustained or not. So my question is, do you think you need, or the National Election Supervisor needs, more administrative help, infrastructure, staffing? Would it have helped you process those unfair campaign complaints if you'd had someone working on them and then presenting them to you in kind of a final form where you could make a decision and then someone could get the answer out?
I'll do a quick answer. The general answer is yes, although the actual functioning would be a little different to what you're saying.
Okay.
What happens is that September 25th, the nominations are closed. We end up with this hundred of candidate statements I have to proofread.
Right.
Mailing lists that have come in that are being challenged, unfair campaign criticisms being offered. So it's a question of all of these things happening at the same time.
Right.
So at that point, both the local election supervisors and myself say, what is the most pressing thing we have to take care of? If I'm getting 100 calls on mailing lists,
yes.
I can choose to ignore that and take care of the fair campaign. If I get 100 calls on the fair campaign, but there's a limited amount of time. So it seems to me what's needed, particularly after September 25th, there does need to be some clerk there working with the National Election Supervisor to handle some of those things which are not quite as sensitive as the fair campaign thing, which should be handled by myself, the National Election Supervisor. I actually, by the bylaws, I'm the only one who could really handle that with the local election supervisor. But it's a combination of dealing with the printing, the clerical work, the mailing lists, et cetera. All of that comes to a fruition at the wrong time, at the same time.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody in the middle of the table? Okay, go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you very much. Mr. Radke, I truly thank you for the report. I read the report from D.C., and I really appreciate Mr. Alston's honest and thoroughgoing criticism. They were very helpful, and I appreciate how you're giving constructive criticism, so I wanted to say that.
Sure.
I have three things I want to talk to you, ask you about real quickly. First of all, what do you think about a bylaws amendment that would change the elections from 2 years out of every three to every other year? Would that be better for us, in your view?
I haven't thought about it.
Okay,
and
no problem.
I can't answer.
Okay. Now more on the problems I had with your work and the work of the local election supervisors. You talk about those of us in management or elsewhere not being accountable to making this thing work. So, like, for example, a rule is passed and then we don't do it. And you're right. Something's not done to make sure that we don't have the problems that could be precluded. But when you interpret the firm bylaws deadline for nominations as something that can be waived, even though the bylaws don't provide for that, what recourse would the board and board have in making sure that we don't have that sort of violation of the bylaws in the future?
Yeah. This is the first election where at least three of the elections were actually carried out according to the deadlines of the bylaws. I want to point that out. No other election has. So the first thing is, you know, there is a question of, did, for example, in the last election where campaign statements weren't sent out, and it was decided finally to send them out on October 15th, which is a little bit late given that that's supposed to be the mailing date. When that went ahead and there was no criticism of that by the board, it indicates to me that if quorum cannot be met, that is within the bylaws. If you have one candidate running for these nine seats, quorum cannot be met. And that is accordance with the bylaws in my interpretation. And we have agreed with that interpretation in the last two elections.
But I hear that. But, for example, in D.C., I think it was a requirement of 1,304 members participating in an election for there to be a quorum.
Yes.
So why couldn't 1,304 people vote for that one candidate or write in others? How could you anticipate that that could not possibly happen?
Because if there's only one candidate for nine seats, people already in Washington, D.C. were throwing their ballots away. At that point, it would be massive. I would not vote in an election like that.
Okay. So I understand that.
Okay.
Now, my last point is there was one significant problem in D.C. where we're not objecting to the election and its consequence, its outcome. I noticed that you and the local election supervisor counted five empty envelopes as ballots and hence people
and save those,
voting,
yes.
And then nine envelopes with ballots that had no markings as members participating in voting. And thanks to those additional 14 votes, D.C. met the quorum by one additional vote. That seems to be totally inappropriate. I mean, I just want to hear your response.
No, we counted only those ballots that came with a valid barcode.
Well, I got it. Yeah. There was a ballot barcode on the envelope, but five of the envelopes, according to your report, had nothing in it.
That's correct.
How in the world can that mean that the person owning that envelope participating in the election if he or she didn't even put a ballot in?
I'll tell you why. There's two answers to that. The first answer is somebody put a stamp on that envelope and sent it in, so they meant that it be part of the election, as long as it's a valid barcode. Secondly, that's been the tradition in the last two elections. So, for example, if people sent in, there was a couple different ways. There were people who, in the last election, would send in a barcode, no ballot. That was counted. That's how we made in Washington, D.C., in the last election. That is how quorum was made.
This one and in past years.
Thank you. I'm talking about 2 years ago. That's how quorum was
Thank
made.
You,
secondly.
Now, hold on.
And that's ridiculous.
And secondly, that has always been the tradition that if people are sending in a valid barcode, that means that they are sending it in to be counted as quorum, even though they're not voting. It's the same thing as sending it in and putting in a blank ballot, which many people also did. Those are known when you look on the printout, it'll say invalid ballot. Invalid ballot is a ballot which has no markings on it. But that's counted as part of quorum.
Mm-hmm. An invalid ballot.
Okay, the last question. Last question. Go ahead, Lawan.
Thank you. Sorry. Just a couple questions. You've gone over it. It's in the report. But the portrait made about headcount and about how you thought that perhaps there should be, you should have a list of the headcount in each station. Well, just, you know, to tell you that in finance, when we first started asking for headcount, we were accused of trying to steal Social Security numbers. So we will help you get to the point where you need to be in terms of getting the headcount. But some of the other little problems and issues with the campaign, and I need to say this because of what had happened with KPFA, is the issue with the list, having access to the list and having the funds to get access versus others not having that the funds to do that. And that in terms of how the election was kind of spliced between fundraising campaigns, so that there was a period of time when the listeners had received these ballots or had received these little postcards with selections on there in terms of who to vote for, but they heard nothing over the air. So again, we just need to, as you have the new timeline, we need to tighten that up so that, you know, there will be no excuse about fundraising that will interfere with making sure these deadlines are met.
Yes.
Thank you very much. You that's it. Our time is up unless you want to extend. Move to extend by 5 minutes. Any objection to extending time for 5 minutes? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Make it short. Make
yeah,
short.
5 minutes.
Make it really short.
Oh, Greg Woomer, I'd like you to stay for that question.
Yes. Oh, sorry, I was just going to
drop. What is it?
It's a bit annoying. It's a bit annoying that at the local level, you know, management is not, you know, collaborating, because that's the bottom line, is management is not collaborating to set out the list because of different entrenched groups who have power and refuse to send this. I don't think this has to do with organization. Now, the election supervisor has spoken about that for a long time. If those lists were cleaned, a lot of those problems of I didn't receive a ballot would not be, you know, would not become a massive problem when you have deadlines to meet. Now, I think that before the board can step into this, how is the, you know, executive director going to step in and exert authority and apply punishment or fines for these behaviors?
The question should be addressed.
It's about elections.
Want me to answer this?
Sorry. Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah, make it brief, though.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, at times we want the executive director to assert authority, and at other times we don't. But I take your point. I take your point. But I don't know that it's really that simple. I think that the situation is probably more complicated than you say it is, and it's not just a question of management, local management. And I don't want to talk about what people are doing in individual stations, but there's also the question of to what extent do you really want your national executive or the national office in general to intervene in elections. I've heard various things. To some extent, I think you want the national office to remain, to some extent, to the greatest extent possible, neutral in the conduct of the elections. That's why it indicates that I hire the election supervisor, that we provide certain kinds of support services to him. But other than that, he acts as a ministerial official conducting independent elections. However, I do believe that it is necessary for the organization as a whole, both for the elections and for other reasons, to fulfill its fiduciary responsibilities, to protect employees, paid and unpaid staff, to have a basic knowledge of who it is who uses the facilities, who is working for the organization. That is to say, a clear identifying information. And this has been a problem. And I see it as, to some extent, a responsibility of general administration and HR to have complete and accurate lists, not only of the names, but also telephone and email contact information, and to some extent certain kinds of basic identifying information in case of emergency, in case somebody gets hurt, in some case somebody needs to be contacted, and also for the purposes of the election. We've discussed this a little bit in the election with the chair of the election supervisor and with Les, and also with the HR director. And I think that it should be done early this year. I don't think you wait until you hire an election supervisor to begin to set the process in motion to have accurate, complete lists of all the people. Now, the question of eligibility and all of the rest, that's a separate issue. But the bottom line is, if somebody uses the facilities of Pacifica as an employee, as a paid or unpaid staff member on a regular basis, we should know something, basic data, about who those people are. And I think that's the baseline from which I would take it. Beyond that, these are other political and bylaws questions that I'm not sure you really want me or the office to necessarily be adjudicating.
Thank you very much.
That's what I meant by that. The question was the list before elections, not for elections, but as you mentioned.
Thank you. Our time is up. Last question here, Bob. 2 minutes.
I just first want to really support the idea of more staff for future supervisors, because you all are totally overworked, and there were dozens of voters at BAI that did not get ballots, that wrote and asked for them, and they still never got a ballot. And that's not anyone's fault, but I think there needs support staff. My question would be about the process of cleaning up duplications. The board dealt with this last fall, and based on what happened at KPFA, where someone was hired to make calls to clean up those dupes, we authorized more money for other stations. And I just want to know what happened with that and how you recommend it be done in the future to prevent duplicates.
The main thing is that we tie that in. It should not be done when the mailing goes out. I mean, it makes it complicated to clean up mailing lists after the mailing has gone out because there are some serious problems. No, there's some serious problems about how we correct it. I mean, people are voting. They're sending it in. If we find out that they're at a different address and it turns out they collect, I mean, it just makes it awkward.
That's ridiculous.
In addition to that, I did start hiring Tracy Robinson, who oversaw the cleanup of the KPFA
Rosenberg
list. What did I say?
Robinson.
Rosenberg.
Rosenberg.
I'll tell her she changed her name.
Oh, I think. Oh, I got it. Tracy Rosenberg. And she started looking at the WBAI list. The initial, but we really had to have access to MEMSIS is the problem because, first of all, it didn't help if people, for example, contributed $75 and there were three people. We don't have the amount of money, so we're sent the list from WBAI. So that problem was a serious problem at WBAI. A lot of couples or people living collectively who sent additional money. But we couldn't clean up the list for that. We did try doing some cleanup with the volunteer list, but it turns out, as it happened, that I'd already had somebody else clean it up, and it didn't help. It just was a little bit late in the process to start that. It should be started now, for example. Exactly. That would be a good time to start cleaning up these lists. And we're not talking a lot of money, and we're not talking a long period of time. The reason I kept, and I'm ending this way, kept the envelopes in the office that it were returned is I want to make sure that it's not only KPFA that takes care of it. KPFA has gone through every envelope that was returned, and they have a mark in the mail section saying, next time, do not mail to that person. The person's still in there, but if the person was deceased, they marked that, and if the person did not have the correct address, they marked that. There were several envelopes from New York. People were deceased, and they wrote angry notes back that they shouldn't be getting ballots. I mean,
deceased people were writing notes back?
Yes. We have a wonderful audience. I've always said that. It's just brilliant.
The same people who voted for Lyndon Johnson.
And so ingenious.
It hurts people when they actually have written in saying remove this and people are still sending it to a dead person's name. I mean it just emotionally it's not spiritually within what Pacifica does to do that kind of thing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.